Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
I'm Julia Tertian, host of Radio Cherry Bomb. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You know what that sound means? That means that news is happening. Exciting things are happening. I am your host of the main course. My name is Patrick Martins. We are engineered by Liz. Liz, have you fallen asleep yet? Has the show been so boring that you've fallen to an instant REM sleep? Hello. Liz is...
Sorry about that. It's such a rainy day outside.
You did fall asleep. It's official. It's official. My show managed to put someone to sleep within 2.5 seconds. No, but we are very, very excited to be recording a new edition of the main course. I actually don't know who our sponsor is, but it's going to play, and we're very excited. So many great sponsors, from S. Wallace Edwards and Sons to Cane Vineyards in Napa Valley. So many great sponsors help keep this station going. It's a 501c3 nonprofit that relies on your donations. So if you like our guest, if you like the content of today's shows, the best way you can communicate that is to participate in our annual fundraising drive, which will start in a couple weeks. Everyone's doing a great job, and we are so excited and honored to have Cal Peternell. How do you say it? Peternell. Yeah, very American. I was ready to French it up. Peternell.
No, that sounds good too.
Peternell, Cal Peternell. You have been at Chez Panisse for 20 years.
Yep.
Unbelievable. And you have just come out with the book. And I mean, the last thing the world needs is another recipe book. I've always said that. And then this book comes along, 12 recipes, and people were arguing over who would get to take the book home. And I got it, and I took it to my wife Ann Saxelby, and she was like, I'm not giving it back to the radio station. They can get to, you know, pay for a book. I use this every day, and it's so funny that a book caused that kind of energy in the office. Cal grew up on a small farm in New Jersey and earned his BFA in painting from the School of Visual Arts in New York City. Living in Italy with his wife, artist Kathleen Henderson, Cal was inspired to pursue a cooking career. After working at various acclaimed restaurants in San Francisco and Boston, including Bix, or is that Bix or B?
Bix.
Everyone always silence like prefi. I'm like, the X is pronounced.
I know that, but also people say Chez Panisse.
I know. Come on, not everything is silent in French. They do pronounce certain consonants. Loretta Keller's Bizou. Lydia Shire's Biba. Ooh, we've had Lydia on before.
Have you? She's
yes,
great.
She is really a fun lady, and I think Aaron made her one of her evolutionaries, which is the highest honor that a food person can get.
Whoa.
It's just a little higher than the James Beard Lifetime Achievement Award. But anyway, Lydia was there, and Chris Schlesinger's The Blue Room. After that, he landed at Chez Panisse. Cal and his wife have 3 sons, one of which is in studio with us, Henderson.
Hi.
Very nice. And live in Berkeley, California. So thanks so much for being on, guys.
Oh, thanks for having us. Yeah, great to be here.
So you were in New York anyway because your son lives here, or are you on book tour? What's going on?
Well, both. My son Henderson goes to the Cooper Union, about to graduate, and is going to be having his sort of graduate painting show in a couple of weeks, which kind of lined up with the book tour. So I'm here to do a few events. I'm going to go to New Orleans and do a couple events and then come back and see the paintings and then go home.
Very, very interesting. Well, I was sad. I was like, oh, Cooper Union, after decades of free tuition, or centuries, maybe.
Yeah,
centuries.
Yeah, 150 years.
150 years. Recently, through terrible mismanagement of funds, the free tuition for the greatest artists in the world is now gone. The money has been squandered.
Indeed.
So you are a historic student. You're one of the very last classes to go without paying a tuition.
Yeah, it's a really a shame. It's a great opportunity, or it was.
It was. And I mean, has that just been obviously such a topic of conversation amongst the student body
yeah,
there?
I think it's been a little bit complicated because at the same time, everybody wants to focus on making good work. And I think that's been sort of decided that making good work is really the only way to like overcome a situation that's unfortunately out of our control.
Well, I mean, I look forward to the day that that administration steps down and, you know, paves the way for the rebuilding of a new endowment that allows, you know, our best artists. It's a group that we should be curating beyond belief. My favorite story about Cooper Union is that, you know, Abe Lincoln said that that the speech at Cooper Union won him the presidency.
Yeah, yeah. I like that, too.
Yeah, very beautiful space in New York, too, if people haven't been. Well, Cal, you just came out with this beautiful cookbook called 12 Recipes. There's a foreword by Alice Waters and Michael Pollan. I guess that's all right.
Yeah, they liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose for a cookbook, that's pretty okay.
Yeah.
It is published by HarperCollins.
Yeah.
And tell us, I mean, but my first question, just to contextualize, tell us about some of the places you've worked, but mainly these 20 years at Chez Panisse. I mean, 20 years at Chez Panisse, what does that mean? Take us through your timeline there.
You know, I also went to art school in New York, to the School of Visual Arts. And around the time I graduated and I started trying to make a career of being an artist in New York, and it's hard, and hard to know whether it's working or not. But I worked in restaurants and as a waiter. But I always sort of paid attention to what was going on in the kitchen. And after school, as you mentioned, we moved to Italy and came back. And I started going around to restaurants, and we moved to San Francisco and started, you know, just sort of putting myself at the mercy of chefs and saying, give me a chance. I'm a quick learner. I'll work hard. And and finally, a great chef, Gordon Drysdale at Bix, gave me a start, and I worked in a few great restaurants. I was lucky to, you know, hit a sort of string of really wonderful restaurants, and then eventually end up at Chez Panisse. And by that time, my wife and I had one son, and the second one was on the way. And Chez Panisse is a great place to be if you want to stick around for a long time, if you want to be like a grown up and have a family and all the things that come with those real sort of, at the time anyway, it was a rarity that you would get vacation time and paid sick pay and, sick leave, and you could, you know, have insurance and 401k and all that stuff. But also an amazing place full of people who are passionate about food, working with the best ingredients that you've ever seen. And working under the with the vision of Alice, and so you were on the one hand making wonderful food with these talented cooks, but also there was sort of a larger element to it. You know, Alice's edible schoolyard projects and a lot of outreach to the community and bringing in. It's a place where that truly has become a meeting place for artists and thinkers of all types and. So it's been a great time there. For the first maybe 17 years or so, I was in the cafe upstairs, which is, you know, a slightly more casual a la carte menu. And then when the two downstairs chefs, the most recent ones, David Tanis and Jean-Pierre Moulet, retired to do their next thing, they had set up this this system. They both had houses in France.
And they would split 6 months, 6 months, right?
Exactly. So they'd go half the year, they'd live in France, and then they'd be back. And so my current co-chef, Jerome Vague, and I sort of inherited that system. And that has allowed me really to write this book because I have, you know, 6 months to do. There's no rules really on what I do in those 6 months, but there's an expectation of something, recharging, re-inspiring, and doing other kinds of work like this. So the last time off, I kind of finished up the bulk of writing the book, and this time I'm out promoting it and visiting my sons.
How many other Chez Panisse employees have been there as long as you, or more or less in that fraternity, that 20-year fraternity?
You know, there's a few who've been there longer. Jerome has been there longer.
Is he the maitre d'?
No, he's the other chef.
Oh, the other chef, he's right,
the,
with you.
He's,
sorry.
Who's the chef now?
Okay.
Hi, Jerome. Thank you.
I remember you.
Yeah. And so I'm not the only one, but I'm one of the, you know, it gets fewer and fewer. But still, and as far as restaurants go, you probably know, there's generally, it's more common that there's a pretty quick turnover, mm-hmm. sort of an annual turnover.
In America.
Yeah.
I mean, in France, a waiter will stay there for 50 years. Right. And like, as you say, you know, raise a family and everything.
Right. Because it's more of like a real profession where you get a decent
respect.
Pay
and, yeah. And they're good at what they do.
Yeah.
That's the case at Chez Panisse too. There's waiters who have been there for a very long time.
That's right. Also. Right. And, you know, there's lots of people there who have families. And we try and work with that and give people the schedule they need so that they can have a life outside, and it pays off because they stick around for a long time, and you're not constantly training a new cook. It's really like a family. People leave and come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so you finally get your chance to be the head chef and to be to get 6 months off. And I actually, the beginning right next to the contents is, I guess, your library, which is kind of cool. I see a Deborah Madison book, I believe, or anyway, I'm not sure. It's kind of hard to see all of them, but if you look closely, you can see the Art of Simple Food. And
there's also Wrestler Baby. Baby Wrestler.
Baby Wrestler, yes. I see that little Bam Bam looking monkey.
I think you gave the Baby Wrestler.
That was a birthday present.
Nice.
It sort of combined the things that my mom loves the most.
Babies and wrestlers?
Babies, wrestlers, and paper mache.
Yeah.
Well, Andy Kaufman, he was my favorite wrestler of all time. He only wrestled women.
Yeah, he was great. And he would cry.
He would cry. He had no problem crying on stage.
In
the ring. So you write your book, and it's so interesting. It's so deceptive. Rather than do what most people do and just, you know, put everything out there and, you know, you did an unbelievable job editing, and your first chapter is on toast. Chapter 2 is eggs. 3 is beans. 4 is salad dressings. You have a pasta chapter, but I mean, you really brought things down to their essence to a certain extent. I mean, when did you know that that would be the format for the book?
Well, you know, the book started as a book that wasn't intended to be published, but that would just be for
me.
For Henderson and his brothers, Milo and Liam. And, you know, it was just like meant to be like a little booklet that they would have to kind of refer to when they couldn't reach me by phone and they were cooking. And so I always felt like I should just write it from the reality of the way we cook at home and what are the things that make up our sort of canon of recipes. And so to start with toast seems like a great place to start. Mm-hmm. You know, toast is, there are still some people who eat toast that have gluten, you know, full on toast. Mm-hmm. And there's several kinds of toast. And, you know, I feel like you've had the piece of toast that's really great. And then you've also had the piece of toast that kind of hurts and rips your mouth up a little bit. And try to kind of let people know that it's important. I remember working with a cook at the restaurant one time, and it was sort of a revelation when I said to them, you know, we're making this toast that we're going to put whatever chicken liver, chopped liver on, and I was like, but you know, the toast should taste great by itself. Mm-hmm. Like even if you didn't have it, it should be really good on its own. Mm. And you know, it's not like. And I remember my father kind of laughing like, oh, well, there can't be like a toast recipe in your book. Toast, who needs a recipe? And in a way, it's true. If you're popping a piece of cut bread into the toaster, you don't need a recipe. But if you're making a really thin, crispy toast that you want to be still tender, there's a way to do that. If you want, you know, that kind of thick toast that's crunchy but soft. And then there's croutons and there's breadcrumbs and the different kinds of uses that, you know, it's just, they're incredibly useful and frugal, you know, sort of frugal because you can use old bread for it.
Old bread, yeah, that's what Anne likes. She loves recycling things.
Yeah.
So
I think that like you were talking about the editing or the, you know, the way that the book is structured. And I think that it really like allows one to think about the way that one cooks in a way that's more about thinking about it in a holistic way, where, you know, where they can be broken down into parts or recipes, but those things all sort of intermingle. And in, you know, and a lot of cookbooks are, the recipes are very specific and deal with a very specific moment or a very specific way of eating that thing. And this, I think this book and the way that I feel like I've learned to cook from you is a lot about like you have these certain things, and maybe you have toast and maybe you have these other things, and they can all come together to be something at a certain, you know, at the, when you're going to eat it, it will be something.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go out to the store to buy all right. the specific things to make this dish.
It's like a dog pile of sorts. That's what Anne and I call it. I'm sure you didn't use that word in your book, but it is. There is something really, you know, reassuring and inspiring about making a delicious meal out of a week's worth of leftovers yeah. and older bread and all that freezer stuff. And
yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's, you know, hopefully there are some recipes in there that are, that sort of stand out on their own, but right. it's not really a lot of like, ta-da, you know, here's this incredible
I braised it for 36 hours yeah. at a low heat and under the sand.
Right. And I bet you never thought to put, you know, fish sauce on.
I bought a whole cow and, you know, separated the legs out. And yes, yeah. I mean, cooking, slow food is fast food in many ways. Not that to say that all these recipes right. happen in a minute, but, you know.
No, but and also that kind of idea that, I mean, you can dip into the book and just cook something for that one night, and maybe you're not eating out every night. I mean, you're going to be eating out the rest of the week, or you're not cooking every night. But ideally, I think it's sort of a cooking for me becomes this sort of serial with an S activity where, you know, every day you're relying somewhat on the things that you either cooked yesterday or the things from the market yesterday, uh-huh. and you're getting fresh things, and it's kind of constantly rolling. And this is a way to kind of make that work. But there's also, you know, there's also a time when the leftovers from the leftovers, that's, you know, at some point you have to put an end to the leftover cycle and just...
Well, yes, I actually think compost. That Anne relies way too much on her ability to recycle food and actually wastes a lot. That's why I like, you order Chinese food once a day and then you're fine. But she actually has, which by the way, I mean, I don't know in San Francisco or in the West Coast, but as you're hanging up the phone in New York, the Chinese food gets delivered. I don't right. know if you recall that. But so when we heard the cow was coming in, of course, that started a flurry of social media, both at Heritage Radio and at Heritage Foods, because we share a common back office. And when someone important that people respect is coming in, you know, it causes a little bit of a tizzy. So rapid fire. I said tizzy because our first question is from Lizzie.
Okay.
Rapid fire. These are five or six questions that we'll get quick responses to. They come from just people who are on social media.
Okay.
Lizzie Sachs. You're the head chef at Chez Panisse. Alice Waters is famous for very simple recipes, which seems to be what you're doing too. How's your book different from, say, The Art of Simple Food?
I love The Simple Food, and so do many people. In fact, I often hear that that's their favorite book of hers, and maybe their favorite book of any books. And I like it too. I tried to make my book be about a little bit less, to make it a little more sort of focused on the specific and more personal kind of foods that we cook in our family. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some overlap, but it's very much it's almost like a memoir of mm-hmm. our family cooking.
I think it's more Italian, too, personally.
And it's more Italian. That's the best way.
Yeah.
Caitlin Pierce. I'll do her voice as I can best do it. In this book, is this book also for people who are already comfortable with basic techniques?
Whose voice should I do it in?
Alice's.
Oh, no, I can't do that. can you do that again? What's the question?
Is this book also for people who are already comfortable with basic techniques?
Yes, it is. It has, you know, it's hard to kind of aim your, to find your audience and, you know, that's sort of a challenge if you're writing a kind of a how-to book is what level of expertise are you assuming that your audience has? And so I kind of, you know, it really helped me to think of my sons and where they're at when I was writing this. And And of course, since then, they've become much better, more accomplished cooks. But I tried to make it so that there's approachable and pretty straightforward aspects to the menus. And then there's variations that can you can get a little more elaborate depending on your budget, depending on your skill level, and depending on the equipment you have, the amount of time you have. All those things go into it, you know. So there's sometimes when you're going to have a fried egg for dinner, and then there's another time when you're going to go for, you're going to make fish stock and make a fideus or something like that. It's all in there, I'm hoping.
Our Mitra Gupta asks, if you could have 5 ingredients in your kitchen, just fire them off, and no honorable mentions. 5.
Onions, salt, olive oil, garlic, pancetta, and anchovies.
Boom! There, you got it. That's 5? The answer. I used to ask Temple Grandin questions. I'm like, I have 25 questions for a 20-minute show. I'm like, what do a dog really want? She's like, love, care, and affection. I'm like, all right, next question. I was done with the interview in like 3.5 minutes.
Henderson, what are your 5?
I think you forgot pasta in there, because you can't eat all those things just as... I guess you could roast the onions and put the...
It was bread one? No. You didn't say bread.
Yeah, there was no
what do you put
vehicle.
The anchovies on? Yeah, you need a ship, a horse. You got to ride some horse out there, some carbohydrate.
I think you roast the onions, and then you make like a anchovy, garlic, pancetta.
Yeah, okay.
Well, or something.
Good answers.
You know, who's asking that question? Maybe there should have been 10.
Amricha.
Are you on a desert island?
I'm just saying.
What is a desert island?
No, I think this is more of a biodome type question, just from the word she used.
Okay, you're Pauly Shore. What ingredients do you have?
I have...
Weed, whites, and wine.
Favorite to-go meal. That's from Pamela Lagler. Cal.
Favorite to-go meal.
She writes, Cal, what's your favorite to-go meal?
Hard-boiled egg.
Roberta's Pizza.
Hard-boiled egg. Roberta's Pizza. Wow, a lot of eggs in the old SUV driving up the coast.
Don't eat a hard-boiled egg on the airplane. It's not a good snack to take on the airplane.
Altitude kills it?
You start peeling it and people start looking around like, oh.
That guy's going to...
Who did that?
Why? It does smell or something?
It smells, yeah.
It does smell.
Yeah.
Last question, Jeet Paul. What keeps you inspired to drive forward in this field, Cal? How do you keep your work exciting and relevant?
Well, the seasons. You know, every season there's just the regular start and end of the season of tomatoes or squash or salmon and finding the new things in those. And I mean, at Chez Panisse, the menu changes every day, so that is a challenge and an inspiration.
Well, I remain one of your biggest fans. You do things very elegantly and seamlessly, and everything you do is obviously at the highest level. This is really your book, and it will live forever.
It's my book, but other people should make it their book as well.
Very nice. Will you sign my 12 recipes for me?
I will.
Me too. Right. I'll also sign it.
I know. Well, you are responsible. I was hoping to get some Harry and the Henderson references, one of the most important movies ever
great
made.
Movie. They made a series of great gum. They had a Harry and Henderson's gum.
Oh, really?
That's lost now, but was once.
Oh, wait. That's one of my 5 ingredients of gum.
John Lithgow hates bumping into me for many reasons, but the main one being that I only ask him about Harry and the Hendersons.
Like,
and he set him free.
Like, oh, where's Harry?
He set him loose at the end. Oh.
Yeah. Harry wouldn't have liked your stuffed boar. That would have freaked him out.
It would have freaked him out, but he would have come to live with it, being sent back into the wild as he was. He'd be like, that's the least of my problems. Well, thank you so much for being on, and you can listen to this interview in a million different ways on social media, and you can also listen to words from Cal and Henderson on the homepage section, which live on in our archives as well. So thanks so much for being
Patrick.
On.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.